But I started to wake up and not enjoy my life. After my divorce, I said to myself, this is not what I want. I feel as if I was walking in my mother's shoes. I was maintaining something for her legacy out of my love and devotion for her. But at this point, I've planted my seeds. I've worked in the paint. So now Dana Cody needs to do what Dana Cody wants to do. My first visit to Ghana was in 2015, and I just fell in love with the country. I fell in love with everything about it. And then I even started to fall in love with my blackness. I started to say, like, wait a minute, I really do come from class. I really do come from royalty. Like, you know, it was beautiful to see black people owning banks, owning gas stations, owning everything. Black judges, black, everything's black.
I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on four continents but traveled to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives. Dana Cody is a reality star, serial entrepreneur, author, and now expat who resides between Ghana and Nigeria. The Miami-born beauty, who is equal parts brain and hustler, was first introduced to the world as a reality star, but she is much more than that. Real estate investor, proprietor of Cody Transportation Corporation, the owner of Miami-based nail salon Tippy Toes Beauty Lounge, which was also a featured reality show entitled Boss Nails on the Oxygen Network. Dana's first introduction to our television screens, however, was on The Real Housewives of New York as the much younger stepmother to cast member Aviva Dreischer. Now, the mogul in the making has chunked the deuces to the U.S. of A. and currently calls Africa her home.
Welcome, Dana.
Hello. I just love your introduction.
Well, I mean, it's all true. So you just in awe of all that you have accomplished. Thank you for, this is like take two. So thank you for your patience. You understand the Wi-Fi in Africa situation. So thank you.
What did you say to me a while ago? You said Africa would teach you patience.
Girl, it's the truth. What's going on? Like, we're in the middle of a pandemic. What's going on where you are? How do you pronounce the city? Ibadan?
Ibadan.
Okay. What's going on in Ibadan?
It's right now, I think they eased the lockdown. We are under lockdown, so a lot of businesses aren't really open, just essential businesses. There's a curfew that is around 7 p.m. and here is really, really enforced. Like, they're doing police checks. Like, if you're out past a certain time, you're going to jail, just flat out.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, like, they don't fuck around. But they're doing a really good job with how they're handling it. Before you can go into any building, you have to sanitize and wash your hands. Masks are mandatory. They also check your temperature. So I'm surprised for it to be, you know, a developing country. I feel as if they're really doing a better job than UK and States, you know?
Yeah. So-called third world nations got their shit together better than the developed nations right now.
Well, they make a joke about it, but shit, you know, here they had Ebola. So if they could fight Ebola, then they could damn sure fight through Corona.
Okay. That's a fact.
See, Corona's like a small fry, but the economy here is still there. One thing I do respect was I noticed that when the president decided to do a lockdown, his people respect his wishes. There was nobody on the streets. Like, for a good month, it was really, really quiet and empty. So that means, like no one wanted to be sick. No one wanted to spread or anything like that. So they just had a lot of respect. And I saw that, and I appreciated that, versus back in States, it's like they're rioting to go out. You know, people say shit like, well, some people just got to get sick and die. that's not the concept here. Everybody wants to be healthy and safe, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, the irony is that, you know, like when it first hit, people were like, oh, you need to come home. Like, girl, bye. I am like, I feel much safer in Africa right now than I
do too. A lot of, I was speaking with my family because they were doing some evacuation, emergency evacuation to DC. And initially I was thinking of going, and I thought about it. I was like, honestly, I'm just safer here. I believe the current to date count is about 2,000 cases in all of Nigeria. So that's a very small ratio.
Yeah, it's about to be off the chain at home with all these protests. But so you're from Miami, and Miami is a multicultural city in that there are huge pockets of Cubans and Haitians. Did exposure to these cultures influence your motivation to travel at all?
I wouldn't say it influenced me to travel. I think it just helped with the acclimation of me being here. It just helped. I'm already used to going into a grocery store that I don't understand the cashier. You know, in Miami, you can go to the fucking courthouse, girl, a government off building, and they don't speak no English. You know what I mean?
My goodness.
It's like that there. Miami is like its own country within itself. So it was quite the same. The only difference is you see more lighter skin. You know, you see Latin people. Here, you see just all chocolate, all brown skin, dark skin individuals. And it's quite, to me, it's beautiful.
And I see you working on your Yoruba every day. I'm like, look, she is really immersing herself.
Well,
that's good.
It's an interesting language because it's more like a dialect. So at first, when you just hear it, it's like, what the fuck? Like, what? I don't understand any of this. And what's funny is one word can be pronounced because of the tones. So one word can have 3 to 4 different meanings. Like, I'm trying to say monkey, but I'm end up saying vagina. You know what I mean? It's spelled the same. But it's the wrong thing. And I'm just, it's important where you go and where you decide to be at. You got to know what people are saying. It's really important, especially me being a single female out here alone, just trying to find out my way. I never want to find myself in a situation where I don't know not even 1 or 2 words. And that's how it was when I first got here. But now when I listen, it's like, okay, I sort of can get I know a little bit of what they're saying.
That's good, because a lot of Americans in particular don't take the liberty to learn the language of our countries where they live. But I'm glad that you took the liberty to do that. So, okay. I read your bio. You have quite an extensive bio to be such a young woman. And you were only 18 years old when you opened Tippy Toes Beauty Lounge in Miami with your mother before her untimely passing. So you kind of spun into this serial entrepreneur. You have your hands in media and real estate, transportation and logistics. What spawned your interest in entrepreneurship?
I sort of was born into it. I didn't really get that opportunity to pursue education like I would have liked to. I did want to go to Spelman and become an attorney, and that was like really my goal and my dream growing up. But what happened was my father was in an accident when I was about 12. So I grew up with him being a paraplegic. But before that accident, he was he was into real estate. He was into transportation and logistics and everything. So I grew up being his legs and his arms and his eyes and his ears. So at 12 years old, I was writing checks. I was collecting the rent money from the properties. He was teaching me how to pay the bills to probably write the account number on the checks and put the check number. You know, like, he taught me accounting. He taught me everything. So I that was just second nature. That's just what I knew. Even in school, it's like I was able to pick up the things that was important, But at a very young age, I would be like, well, this subject is just fucking irrelevant because I'm already working at 12 and 13 and these questions haven't arisen in my lifestyle. You know, and my mother had an opposite story. She was adopted. She had a very, very rough life growing up. She had her first child at 15. So she picked up a trade. She didn't get that opportunity to go to college, and nails was her thing. Nails was her passion. So I grew up in a salon. I grew up as a little girl, you know, picking up, you know, when they clip the tips, you know, to put the size that you want, the length that you want. Yeah, I grew up picking them up off the floor and gluing them onto my nails and polishing them and doing all my friends' nails, like as a little girl since I could remember. So it was always just in me. Nails, believe it or not, was never my interest. I never liked nails. Truthfully, I still don't like nails. Yeah, I could not tell you what's the latest trend, what's the latest color collection. I never was into that shit. I was always just about the money. So, you know, like you said, my mother and I, as soon as we opened, I was 18. She was diagnosed with leukemia. So while she was doing her chemo and in remission, I was a 18, 19-year-old girl running a full salon with 9 employees, starting from women in their 40s and 50s and grown men. Yeah. So that's how I learned the industry. And I didn't put a focus in the actual art. I put the focus in the business, in the marketing, and in the clientele. And that's why she and I made perfect partners, because my mother could draw your face on a nail. Meanwhile, I can be her feet and go out and bring in the people that wanted their face on their nails and that would pay top dollar for it, you know? So, entrepreneurship sort of just, I was crowned with that from a little girl. I didn't have a choice.
What I was saying is, like, you learn how to get it out the paint from 12 years old. So it's no wonder that you've accomplished so much. And like, what are you for your birthday's on the 21st, you're gonna be like, you're still in your early 30s. So okay, we're gonna get into more because you have some quite riveting stories. But this kind of leads me to my next question, because I mentioned that a lot of people came to know you from your appearances on The Real Housewives of New York for having a septuagenarian Jewish husband and being a stepmom to Aviva, who was one of the castmates. So the trajectory of your life is so compelling. How did you go from being an 18-year-old entrepreneur dealing with the tragedy of your mother's untimely passing to being a featured reality star?
Well, and that's funny. Is when you say it like that, I'm like, wow, did it happen like that? There was a lot of development in the midst of it, I'll tell you that.
I really don't know how it happened. I think it was just my destiny. I met George online dating on blackpeoplemeet.com. And this is probably the first interview that I could actually tell the fucking truth, because for years we were coerced to say, oh no, he met you at your salon and stick with that shit. But that wasn't the truth. I've always dated outside of my race. Even as a young girl, I grew up in Alabama, Opa-locka, Alabama, Auburn, Alabama. So my first kiss was with a white boy. And my grandmother from my father, her husband was Jewish. That was my father's stepdad. And that's who raised my dad. And that's how he was so business savvy. So I guess it was just a generational thing where I've just been attracted to white guys or different ethnic men, right? So I see this white guy on blackpeoplemeet.com. I'm like, okay. He put a girl, he put a really younger picture of himself there. I got catfished, I guess, in a way. But we were just emailing each other. And George, his name is George. George is one of the most intelligent individuals I've ever met, okay? Highly, highly intelligent. So his wordplay was just astonishing to the point that I would have to Google, like, wait, what the fuck does this mean? And what does that mean? And that just turned me on. Like, I'm in love with a person's mind. So yeah, we just started back and forth, and it took me maybe 2 months of emailing to actually meet up with him because he was based in Miami. And my first date, I'll never forget, it was at his place. He had a penthouse on Collins Avenue. And I got there and he had it all dark, candles lit. That's because he didn't want me to see his fucking age. You know what I mean?
Hell nah.
Girl, he didn't want me to see his age. And you know those really huge wine glasses where you think you're only drinking a little, but you're drinking the whole damn bottle? Yeah. So that was the first date. And what stuck out to me with him was I remember eating and I wasn't using proper table etiquette. And he says to me, are you going to eat with your knife and fork or are you going to continue to just eat like you've never been anywhere?
Oh.
And I was just like, oh, okay. I remember leaving and Googling proper Western dining setting, Eastern dining setting, European dining setting. And after that, honestly, I think I was hooked. I knew, obviously it's daddy issues, it's mommy issues by losing my parents, but I knew that I needed someone in my life that can help guide me and teach me. And I also knew where I was. You know, I was at that time, I had a larger location. I had about 20 people working under me. And I was dating different guys, but NFL players and stuff. And you can meet a guy who has millions of dollars, but he can't really teach you anything,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that was the thing with George. We started with him giving me books. And I was just like, oh, okay. So we got a little closer because there was a situation when my father had a trust account where the heirs could not get the money until we were 40. I was 21, 22 at the time. And I was like, I'm the only girl and I'm the youngest. And I knew that if that was true, my dad would have said something to me when he was alive and he didn't. So things didn't sit right with me. And the spirit just led me to ask George for assistance. So I took the trust to him and we would meet once a month to read over the trust and highlight and go through things and go through things and go through things. And it did work in my favor because I was able to fight the banks without an attorney. They made the bank as the fucking trustee, which no one would ever do that, right? It doesn't make sense. So it worked in my favor. I fought the bank. I was, I think, 23 at the time. They made me trustee over everything. But what it did do, which I didn't realize until, you know, hindsight looking back, it put George too much in my personal business.
Mm.
So he sort of knew what I was coming in and that ended up, you know, coming out years later in the marriage. But that is how we started off. That's how we started our relationship. As I started getting a little bit older, I started straying away from George because George was a super playboy. Even at 72, girl, George would not text back, not call back.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Call me different girls' names and shit. And I'd just be looking at his old ass like, are you fucking kidding me? So after a while, I had a client, Black China, and she had just got with Tyga and moved to LA. And she and I decided we were going to open a LA location together. So around this time, I was traveling back and forth to LA a lot, and I wasn't really responding to George anymore. I wasn't emailing him. I wasn't texting him. So he got my attention. He texted me one night. He said, hey, would you mind doing a mock engagement on my daughter's show? And I had never even watched Real Housewives of New York at the time. I heard of Aviva, but I didn't know who she was. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't give a fuck, to be honest.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, cool. But the stipulations were, I have to be able to do their nails because I'm always about product placement and branding. If I'm going to go on national television again, because this was my second time doing reality TV. My first time, I did a dating show called Find Me My Man, which was on Oxygen.
Oh, okay. So you had a pre-existing relationship with Oxygen. Cast,
yeah, I did, but they didn't put one and one together until I got picked up later.
Oh, okay.
You know, until later. They were like, wait a minute. Dana Cody, we know you from somewhere. And that's when they said, oh, okay. But no, I knew a little bit about reality TV. And I was like, okay, well, if I do this show again, this is how I want it to be. I need to be able to do Aviva's nails or someone else's nails. I need product placement. And Andy Cohen, he agreed. They sent pictures of me and George, I guess I got flued out
That was really smart, though. That, how old were you then? Like 26?
No, I was 22. I was about 22.
Oh, and you, that's smart that you had enough business savvy at 22. It was like, okay, yeah, I'll be on your reality show, but you need to negotiate my product. That was really savvy.
Yeah. I mean, had I known even more, I would have wanted a guest appearance fee and this and this and locate, and, you know, but, you know, you know what we have to learn and what I've learned? I've done so much pro bono shit to help me be the woman and be where I'm at today. So I'm happy I didn't have that mindset. I just had the mindset of, okay, I'll do this shit for free, but I wanted to brand tippy toes a little bit later. So I flew out to New York, and that was actually my very first time meeting Aviva.
Oh, wow.
And so nervous. Yeah, I had never met her, never even spoken to her on the phone. To her, I was just one of her dad's latest girlfriends. That's it, you know? He has so fucking many. So I remember wearing black lipstick, and George dressed me. He said, you know, dark-skinned women should always wear black lips, black lips. This was before Kardashians came out with the black lips phase, okay? Dana Cody started that shit. So,
say it.
So, it's true. So I came out with the black lipstick and a beautiful gown, like, you know, dress with the bangs, whatever, and the long, I wore long stiletto treasure nails. Treasure nails is my product with Real Swarovski crystals. I trademarked that and patented that concept back in 2007.
Wow.
So I wore that so, you know, the cameras could get it. And maybe they probably looked at it like, okay, it's a little ghetto, but I didn't give a fuck because I was fabulous and I got my camera time. I had Wendy Madden there. Steve Madden's wife was at my engagement dinner. I had some people from J.P. Morgan, a Chase Bank. I mean, it was quite elaborate guest list, and I didn't know any fucking body. So it was a little tense, but I just was being myself and joking around, and I said something about, I think Aviva or her husband Reed asked me, so Cody, why haven't we ever met you? And I said, well, I figured I was George's little black secret.
Mm.
And whole table just started laughing, and they was like, oh shit, okay. So she started so we could sort of go there, and the producers liked the way I could handle, you know, it was a little racism there, but not too, you know, I saw what was going on, and I never them control the dynamics of the conversation. I took control of that and let them know I'm fucking black, I'm beautiful, and I'm here, so what's up,
period.
So we, period, you know. So we did the engagement, and afterwards, honestly, when the cameras were down, I was expecting for George to ask for the ring back. And we got back to the hotel room, and he completely just changed. It was like, yeah, invite your girlfriends over. You want champagne? You want this? You want that? I'm like, wait a minute. This ain't the same guy that I was dating, because George is Jewish and frugal as fuck. And when we were dating, he never gave me $1. And I never asked, because I had
your own money,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, it was like, here's Cody, charge it on the room, or do this, or do that. I was just like, huh? And we did the production, the producers asked us to do another scene where they had me go to, not Ramona, the one that was married to the guy from the bank, Sonia Morgan's house.
Uh-huh.
I went to Sonia's house to do their nails, and we talked, and this and this, and, you know, And that was that. And then we did the engagement party. And when the cameras were off, the women got very racist. Very. Not Aviva. But they were saying some shit. They were coming at me all type of ways.
What?
And that was an yeah, girl.
Sonya
got drunk and said that she had the same disease. They were doing this behind George's back. So productions would separate us, and I would just have all of the housewives in my chest. I think Ramona said, well, aren't your parents dead? What do your parents think of this old girl? Like, oh, poor child. Like, you know, She came at me about that. And then Sonya, when the cameras went down, later said that she has the same disease as Michael Jackson. She's really black. But, you know, they were saying some crazy, crazy shit.
Oh, no.
And I was able to invite only a few people. Yeah, I was able to invite only a few people. And one of the individuals who I invited was Teyana Taylor's mom. Miss Nikki came and her husband came. And yeah, Miss Nikki's amazing. And they were my support team. So they were like, Dana, don't pay that shit any attention. Don't worry about it. It's for the cameras. But to wrap that whole situation up, headed back to Miami, I'm thinking that I'm going to go back to my life and back to my salon. And I just did this TV show. And George was like, no, I'm sending movers to your house to pack you up and you're moving in with me. And this was real. So I like tricked into engagement. I didn't really get the option, girl. I didn't get the, you know, do you want to do this or not? No. It was like, we're doing this, and so be it. And that's how I ended up going from just, an entrepreneurial nail tech to a married lady to George.
That is so, man, that's so crazy. That's not actually shocking that that they would be that way, you know, when the cameras turned off, especially Ramona. She just seemed like that kind of bitch. But, okay, so I...
You know what, though? I think... With being around, I'm not even gonna call them white people, being around other cultures, it's just ignorance. And they don't know. Just like we
Girl,
don't know a lot of things.
I'm sorry. You fucking know better. You know what's fucking appropriate and what's not. I knew it was shady as
fuck. You do know what's appropriate and what's not, and then you don't. Because when I looked at the show, years later, because Ramona had a lot of backlash from certain things that she said, and George, you know, said a lot of things to her, whatever. But when I looked at the show years later, the truth of the matter was she was saying some real shit, because I was looking at it coming from a white older woman. But what she was basically saying was, if this was my daughter, I would never let her marry a piece of shit like you. And that's because we know our own kind. And she knew the truth about George. She knew how he really was. She knew how he really felt, because she know how she feels. You know, racism is there. It's a part of American culture. It's a part of the world. So she knew what really was going on. And what was really going on was the family was trying to have a spinoff show about myself, George, Aviva, and this blended family.
I appreciate how low-key you've actually been about your divorce from your husband. And I understand... just the hurt of as a fellow divorcee. How has your heart been doing now, recovering from your divorce?
You know, that's a tough question, honestly. I think I'm a lot more guarded than before, but in the same realm, my focus and my concern is to not allow that hurt and that pain to completely closed me off from finding love again. And George and I, we really decided, because of the age difference finally caught up to us. When I first met him at 21, I wasn't thinking about children. I wasn't thinking that far. And then when I hit 30, that's when it was like, wait a minute. You know, and at that point we had been together 8 years, married for that long. You know, it had to be some type of love there for it to last that amount of time, being a 52 year age difference, you know? So I wanted children. It was something that George just couldn't do physically. And even though it probably hurt him to have to let me go, it was just the best thing for my future. You know, he was married previous for 44 years and they had children together. So he knew and knows that I deserve that same opportunity. I deserve to find someone that I can grow old with.
Wow. I mean, I just, every time I talk to you like on and offline, I'm just like, you have old bitch sensibilities. And you're so young. But I mean, look, you started getting out the pain at 12 years old. You married an old Jewish man, 52 years your senior. Like, your story is so interesting. And it brings me to my next question, because your debut book entitled The Crab That Made It Out of the Barrel is a coming to life novel. And it's something like a memoir. Could you tell us a little bit more about your book and what it catalogs about your life?
Well, the book is funny. I swear that it was my mother's spirit that just wouldn't let me rest. I just started to reflect on myself and everything that had happened. And I had a really crazy traumatizing childhood growing up. I know a lot of people have, but mine in particular was pretty bad, from being molested to all type of different shit. And I found like the pattern of what my parents had been through, especially my mom, I found myself repeating history. You know, like they say, the generational curse. And I just felt like the book really starts, it's really my mother's story. It really starts with my mother and what she went through, and my father and what he went through, and how they came together. And then it goes into me, because you are, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, as the saying goes. So I really had to get out, and it's a very candid book, to the point that I could not even read it again. And once I did write it, I said, oh shit, Dana, like, this should have just been a journal. Like, this should have not been out for the public. Some people even said it was a trigger book, but I'm happy I wrote it. And many, many people contacted me in tears, or sending long emails just saying they too have been molested. They too have been through certain situations, and they just didn't even know that I had went through what I went through, and I still keep a smile on my face, and I'm still helping hundreds of people learn an industry and doing what I was doing. So the book really starts off, and it just brings a highlight to young men and women and men that, you know, be careful to not continue a generational cycle. Acknowledge and see things that your parents have made, the mistakes that they made, and shake that shit. Because many of us grown men and women, adults, we are still living and blaming the mistakes of our parents.
Yeah.
We have these blockages, you know, and when the shit boils down to it, it's really because your parents fucked up, and you can't shake it. You can't say to yourself, I'm an adult. What happened in the past happened in the past, and let me move on. And I think now that that book was out, and it was a release. It was truly a release.
Yeah, I downloaded it to my Kindle. I need to delve completely into it over the weekend.
Oh, well, drink some wine and make sure you have a happy movie to watch afterwards. And you know what else I did it for? I did it to challenge my peers to write their book. I did it to say, you know what? Everybody doing this boutique shit. Everybody want to sell hair, sell clothes, sell this. Write a fucking book. It's a product. I'm selling books in my sleep. It's a product. It's me. You know what I'm saying? And it was not easy. It was not easy. Many, many nights I found myself writing, and I was falling to depression about it and be like, damn. Because what many of us do with trauma, we block it out. We block it out.
Yeah.
But it's still there. Yeah. And we find ourselves reliving those past experiences or feeling those past emotions because they're instilled in us. So until sometimes you write it out or say it out, you don't realize what you've been through.
So it was a cathartic experience, obviously, but it was like therapy or something.
It was very therapeutic, and it was a healing and cleansing of my soul. And I feel like my mother's spirit is more at ease and at rest. Like, her voice was told. I wrote something and it stuck with me. I said that my mother died before she was even a woman. And I realized that my mother died when she was 42. She had her first child at 15. She had me when she was 18. She had her next child at 21. So now that I'm a woman in my early 30s, I started to realize, like, wow, like at this age right here, my mother had 3 kids with no degree and had to put food on the table for us with no husband. Like, how the fuck did she do that? How did she get through that? And when I feel as if a woman really doesn't start to get into her womanhood until her 40s and 50s, and she didn't even make it that far. She didn't even make it to the point where, okay, my children are grown, now I can do me. I'm past the struggle. It's like as soon as she got her business, she couldn't even be there.
Wow. Well, she's so proud of you, and you know, she's living vicariously through you right now. So she's like shining down and so proud.
Thank you so much.
I mentioned in your bio that you have packed your bags and have officially joined the Black Broads Abroad expat community. What was the inspiration for saying peace out to the United States and moving to Africa?
Honestly, I think I forced saw everything that's happening now. I for one, the hardest thing was to close Tippy Toes. I started that business over 12 years ago, and it was more than just a salon. Every woman knows, even men know how the barbershop is or how the salon is. Like, that becomes like your home. You trust your stylist. You get there, you tell them about your marriage problems, or you get what I'm saying? Like, you meet people, you meet friends, and that's really what Tippy Toes was about. It was like, it was family, and it hurt me to have to decide to just walk away, to the point I didn't even tell any of my clients. I just closed the doors. I told my staff, hey guys, I'm going to pay you for 2 weeks after this, but this is it. I'm sorry. Because I didn't want that emotional attachment to even bring me down even more. But I started to wake up and not enjoy my life. After my divorce, I said to myself, this is not what I want. I feel as if I was walking in my mother's shoes. I was maintaining something for her legacy out of my love and devotion for her. But at this point, I've planted my seeds. I've worked in the paint. So now Dana Cody needs to do what Dana Cody wants to do. My first visit to Ghana was in 2015, and I just fell in love with the country. I fell in love with everything about it. And then I even started to fall in love with my Blackness. I started to say, like, wait a minute, I really do come from class. I really do come from royalty. Like, you know, it was beautiful to see Black people owning banks, owning gas stations, owning everything. Black judges, Black, everything's Black, you know?
And on the money too, right?
On the money, and highly educated. And very highly educated. And I just got tired of this shit. Miami's expensive. Atlanta's overpopulated. Same shit. New York is just not my forte. You know, I had my business in LA. LA is very segregated. I was out in the valley in Calabasas. So, you know, I sort of had the opportunity to live in some of the most prominent places in the United States. So I didn't want to go to South America. I wanted to take my goodness and my intellect and my glory to a country that would respect it and needed it and can also feed it. Because in states, so you pour so much of yourself. I help uplift and build hundreds of people and teach so many people a craft and a trade to feed their families. But every night I found myself feeling empty. So I wanted to be somewhere where I felt like, you know, I would be appreciated. I would be welcomed. And I also, you know, my money tripled.
Okay, that part. Let's talk about it.
You know, my money tripled. Like, I can get a nice place. I got a chef. I got a driver. I got security. I got all of this for half of the price of what I'm spending to live on South Beach, you know? And I read somewhere, or maybe it was a movie, I think. Yeah, it was a movie, The Hateful Eight. And Samuel L. Jackson has said something. The guy said, life is hard. Life is something. And he said, no, life ain't supposed to be this hard. And that sat with me for a while, because we really make life harder than what it has to be.
Don't we?
We really do.
The divided states is not the end all be all. Like, there's abundant life outside the confines of the divided states of America.
It really is. And it's,
I wish more of us understood that.
And it's a lot of money in this continent. It's a lot of money in Nigeria. It's a lot of money in Ghana. It's more money and opportunities for me here than there is no, well, absolutely, this candidate is Black and this one is white, so we're gonna go with the white. No, I don't have to worry about that issue. It's who's educated, who's gonna do the hard work, and who's gonna get the fucking job done. Let's do it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because like, I just feel like the bag is in Africa. The bag has always been in Africa. That's why the whole world has exploited it for so many centuries. But
it really is.
The least barrier to entry to get to the bag is here too, because, I mean, if you come in with, you know, like Western education and the kind of entrepreneurial experience you've already had, bringing that level of expertise to Africa, my goodness, that's probably a whole other show that I'm going to do. But you mentioned that you have been to Africa before. In 2015, what brought you to Africa prior to your moving there?
Well, I don't talk too much about this company because it's like, I don't want people to be like, what? But in 2015, I created Cody's Minerals. And I initially went to buy gold. And I got into that business, and then it went from gold to I started buying rough diamonds. So I lived in Guinea Conakry, which is an hour away from Sierra Leone, for about 7 to 8 months. And I did a few trips. I had a full setup office, a gemologist and everything. And that was something that my ex and I was doing together. And for once, it worked because they really wasn't fucking with him. They wasn't fucking with the white man. You know what I mean? And it was the opposite because I'm used to having to get in the door using George's face. Now it was reversed. Now he had to get in the door using Dana's face. So I initially came here for minerals and I did a few runs, and that was a very risky and dangerous business. So I you know, got out of that, but that was my first reason for visiting here.
I'm glad you mentioned that story. I mean, you've had your hands in so much. Minerals and transportation and media and beauty. But I just want to clear this up because since like people were first introduced to you on The Real Housewives of New York and you were married to an older Jewish gentleman, the perception could be that you were a gold digger, but just to set the record straight, you came into the relationship with your own bag. I want to clear up any misconceptions that
you know. I think that had a lot that played a major problem within that marriage too, because it was hurtful to read articles of me being called a gold digger. And even to this day, people that I meet or a guy that I'm dating, when they look at my ex, they look at me and be like, oh, she's a gold digger, she's this. Because it's sad. It's sad that people don't understand that life insurance pays. It's sad that people don't understand that, yeah, there are black parents that leave their children with trust accounts. So I'm not ashamed to say I'm a trust fund kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not afraid to say that. My father had it, my mother didn't. So I had the best of both worlds. And when my father passed away, he left his he told me, you will never need a man for anything. That's why I work as hard as I do. So there was real estate left to me. There was cash left to me. There was assets. There was stocks. There was bonds. There was so much shit that I didn't even, and this happened for me when I was 21. So at 21, I was sitting at big major talking about big numbers. At 21, I sued the bank to become head of trustee over my father's trust. At 21. Wow. This is what people do not know. You know, my mother took care and she had life insurance. So I already had my business. I already owned my properties. I already had my cars, my jewelry, my clothes. I already had a certain lifestyle. And the truth being told, if anyone knows Jewish guys, they are very frugal. So clearly, I didn't have what I had, would not have fucking married me. He was at the point where he found a young woman that could match his flyness. Match him now. Did he have more money than me? Of course. But he also saw my potential. I never was with George for his money. Uh-huh. I didn't have to be. I didn't need him. And what's funny about people is, if I was a gold digger, why the fuck was I working 7 days a week? Why was I waking up, opening my business, sweeping and mopping, and still doing nails and still scrubbing toes myself?
Wow. Why?
Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much money a man has, it's important for a woman to maintain her own.
Though you are spitting unmitigated facts. Like, financial independence is so important. It is so important. I'm glad you set the record straight, because, you know, just in getting to know you, you know, people might have misconceptions about that. So thank you for clearing that up. So, okay, now you're living in Nigeria at the moment, because you were kind of like caught in the crux of this pandemic. How have you been acclimating just to living in Africa in general?
Well, patience is key, you know. Ghana is now a more westernized than ever. It wasn't like that in 2015 when I went. And I came to Nigeria, and that's when I think I'm starting to see like real West Africa. Like, I'm starting to be like, oh, okay. Hey, you know, and I'm not even in Lagos, where there are high rises and certain stuff like that. No, I'm in what's called like an ancient city that's really deep within its culture, and it's still how it was from many, many, many years ago. And I appreciate that. So it hasn't been easy. It has not been easy. But what I would advise anyone to do is, especially Americans, some of us have entitlement issues. And we feel like we're more superior than wherever we go and wherever we travel. That's why a lot of people don't really fuck with us like that.
Yeah.
I had to take myself off my pedestal. I had to say, I am not a celebrity. I am not a millionaire. I am not Dana Cody, the boss bitch. No, I'm just a regular diaspora from States, and I'm trying to find my roots. So however I need to come and be humble and open-minded and courteous, and that's how I'm here. You know, like, I've done some shit that I would never probably expect to have to do. And even the people that are around me are like, wow, like, she's really doing a thing. I don't have a driver. I drive myself. I don't have a cook. I cook for myself. The only thing that I haven't started doing yet is like going to the market. Like, I'll have like certain people that I know that's not going to just charge me too much. And I keep going to them. Like, they know the American girl.
Girl, you are turning into like a proper Niger woman. I've seen you in the full regalia, your Instagram feed, cooking egusi soup, and like looking.
Yeah, cooking moi moi. Like, I'm trying. It defeats the purpose. It defeats the purpose to come to a different country and not want to learn where your ancestors and how your ancestors lived. It defeats the purpose of me doing it. Like, this is a challenge to me. It's a beautiful challenge. I it's very becoming.
That's a fact. You mentioned like being in a place and like doing the things that your ancestors may have done. Have you ever had a DNA analysis?
I did right before I came, and it's funny because I, you know, Ghana is my place of residence, and Nigeria has University of Ibadan and stuff like that, because I'm actually here to go to school, to go to law school. And I said to myself, because it was like, which place did I want to be? So I said, when I get my DNA back, if I'm from Ghana, I'll go to Ghana. If I'm Nigerian, I'm going to stay in Nigeria. And it came back that I'm 53% Nigerian. So
it was like, that explains your work ethic.
Yeah. It was like, baby, you home, you know? And is here. There's another DNA analysis that tells you exactly like if you're Yoruba or Igbo. It tells you like where you're from. So when I go back to States and I set that, or whenever the economy and mailing and shit opens, I'm going to do that too, to find out exactly where I'm at, where I'm from.
Yeah, I want to do it too. I used to be reluctant to do it because I was like, oh, I don't want my DNA out there in the world, but I've been to jail now, so they already got it. So I'm gonna just go ahead and
you so silly. You know, they say, what's okay. I forgot. Hello,
go ahead.
No, I just feel as if it's really, really important to know where you come from, to know where you're going. It's really, really, it's the smallest things. Where you see a lot of African Americans with cancer and diabetes and certain problems. And it's because certain foods that they're eating, their blood type can't even digest it. You understand that? So it's like the smallest things for you to find out culturally, what country you're from, what tribe you're from, is extremely important, because that's who you are.
Yeah. That's a fact. Yeah, apparently they have a facility here that I could go to. My homegirl is the home my homegirl Lana that I want to introduce you to. I'm gonna have to do it. So, okay, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned in all of this about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
The biggest lesson I've learned: believe in yourself. Believe in yourself, have faith. I don't, you know, whatever you are spiritually or religiously, believe in yourself and your ancestors, and just, you gotta know yourself. Know that you can make it and you can do it. Do not live in fear, because had I continued to be in fear, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. It is very scary getting on a plane by yourself, you know, and saying, I'm going to relocate to a place where people are kidnapped and little, you know, bullshit. And also, don't believe what you hear. Go and figure that shit out for yourself. Because in America, they make Africa look like people still living in trees. And it's a dangerous place. And there's no money here. But the reality is, it's fucking plenty of money here. People are not living in trees. They're living in fucking mansions, bigger than the mansions in America. And everything you need is here. But I would have not known that had I just listened to what other people say.
Yeah, that part. That part. Listening to what other people say. Like, what advice do you have for Black women that are considering moving abroad? Because there can be a lot of naysayers, and that could interfere with your decision to do it. So what's your advice?
Don't listen to anyone. My advice would first, you know, I'm about my money. I'm a businesswoman. Make sure you set yourself up. Don't do no stupid shit where you don't burn no bridges. You understand? Like, if you got a good job and you want to take a leave, do it the proper way. You understand? Like, make sure you cross all your T's and dot your I's. That's the first and foremost thing. What helps me stay afloat, because initially, you know, you have to get your residency, your visa, your green card, and certain things to be able to work. So what helped me is having my residual income in states. And because of that, I can live even nicer where I'm at. So that's the first thing you want to do. You want to develop something, whether it's an online boutique, whether it's drop shipping, whether it's whatever, create something where you're going to have a steady income to keep you afloat until you can get a job or until you can get a contract with a government or something where you are, or work with the UN and stuff. That's the first advice I would say. The second thing is, don't be afraid to socialize, but also keep both eyes open. Be vigilant. Know your shit, know people. Be able to protect yourself. You know, I do boxing. I've done martial arts. You know, like, I didn't come just with nothing. I got my little taser. I got pocket knives. I got, if I could have brought my gun, I would have brought my guns. You feel me? Like, don't get it twisted. I can fucking stick and move and get myself out of a fucking situation. I can drop kick a bitch. They won't see it coming. So I prepare. I prepared myself for this before I came. And then I made sure, and I was very lucky and blessed to meet a good person, a good host, something that somebody that I'm developing, working with, and partnering with, that is just a good person. I did my research on them before I came too. As women, sometimes we don't do our proper research on the areas and the locations. You can get set up with something as simple as your driver, you know? Go to your driver's house, meet your driver's wife, meet your driver's kids. Know who, what, when, and where at all times.
That's really good advice. And I'm probably going to do a whole other episode on job arbitrage, because that's a real thing. Like, getting that residual income and you're being remunerated in dollars and you move to certain, like, emerging nations. I mean, in South Africa, my money go, like, it's like $1 to like 16, 17 rand right now. So, like, literally I could get just a dope pad. You can get a dope pad out here for like $500 a month in the richest square mile in Africa. So, but wow. Do your research. Yeah, do your research. So my last question is, what is up next for you, and where can people keep up with your journey on social media?
Well, right now, everything is on pause, but I am enrolling in the University of Ibadan here. I am doing law, so that's my 5-year situation. But in the process, what I realized what they need here is they need a cosmetology academy. Everyone here, they're so talented, but they're self-taught. Like, they're doing bomb makeup, bomb nails, bomb haircut, barbering. But they learn from YouTube, but they learn from each other. So I think it's really, really important that I open up a very nice facility that's going to set them up properly and give them the right education about how to perform a pedicure on a diabetic, what products are properly used, how to get out an ingrown toenail, what athlete's foot is, what this fungi is, what that is, because they don't know. They really don't know. And it's my job to show them, you know, I did this in America. I've taught people. I did Boss Nails, the TV show. And before I knew it, there was hundreds of black nail salons opening up everywhere. And they did that based off of my inspiration. There's people here. Yeah, the blueprint. I have people here that I went and visit their salon, and they told me, like, hey, I saw Boss Nails and it inspired me, and I opened a salon. So I have people in Tanzania. I got people in Uganda, Ghana, Nigeria, like people in South Africa that really saw my show, and it inspired them to open up. Hell, there's a Tippy Toes in Zambia.
For real? Wow.
Yeah, it's a Tippy Toes. Yeah, she spelled it with a Y, though.
Oh, I love it. You're such an inspiration. Thank you for being such a G, because, you know, African Wi-Fi relented today for us to have a full and complete interview without a glitch. Thank you.
No, I'm excited. And I just want to tell you, I thank you for being the woman that you are. You know, you reach out to me on Instagram, and a lot of people reach out to me on social media for interviews or send an email or whatever like that. And I don't have a problem with doing it, but some people just don't pique my interest. But you went beyond just the interview. You went actually to check on me. You made it for us to build a friendship. And I thank you so much for that, because we're on different time zones. So when I'm going through certain things, I can't call back home because I don't even want to give them my drama at 7 a.m. You know what I'm saying? I have enough respect like that. So it's beautiful for me to have someone that I can hit up and be like, yo, girl, like, you got a moment? Can we talk? This is what I got going on. What you think about that? And you done helped me as far as, like, yo, you send newsletters about grants for nails, grants for this, this for that. And I'm like, wow, like, this sister really cares about her people. This sister is highly intelligent and so influential and so educational. And I just want to say thank you for this. Thank you for this platform. I sit back and I listen to your podcast, and I love the interviews. It motivated me even more, because we were been supposed to do this for months, but I actually said the interviews, and I'm just so happy. So I was like, okay, I'm not the only crazy bitch that done hopped on a plane and left.
Okay. For
real. I'm not the only crazy bitch who walked away from $1 million a year to, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody else is like, bitches, you're crazy. But you got doctors that walked away from their practices to move to certain places. And you got just so many different people from so many different professions. And it's like, you've created a society for us. And I just want to thank you for this platform.
Thank you.
For you being you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm glad it unfolded the way that it did. I now consider you one of my friends, and we already know we both don't be fucking with people the long way, but
you, Pat, believe it or not, you have surpassed being a friend. I actually consider you like a sister, and I thank you for that. And that's hard for me to say, because I ain't got no sisters. and I don't fuck with women. So I know, like, you my confidant. Like, if I hit you up, it ain't no gossip shit. It ain't no, oh, it's going to be a blog about this. No, no, like, no, we're there and we're solid. And I cannot wait to meet you. I can't wait to meet you, girl.
I know. Soon come, soon come. Thank you for your time.
Shout out to our Patreon members for your support. If you too are interested in joining the Black Bras Abroad movement, you can follow us on social media, and that's BlackBroads. That's on Instagram and Facebook. And if you'd like to become a supporter on Patreon, you can do so on patreon.com/blackbroadsabroad.